We are going to look at two judges together tonight, and it's because not much is said of these two judges. I want us to look at them together because many people refer to these judges as minor judges. You'll remember in the Old Testament we have prophets and minor prophets. The prophets all have big books like Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. And then we have these minor prophets like Nahum and Habakkuk and Zephaniah and Malachi. Those are small books and we call those minor prophets. So when you look at a study or a commentary for the book of Judges, you do not find much information on the two men that we will be looking at tonight, Tola and Jair. And when we look at these two men, I want us to realize that they're not minor in any way. And so, too many times when nothing drastic or major happens, we call someone, that must be a minor ministry or a minor prophet or a minor judge. And the church today falls for this same thing. People today have this idea, unless you came out of some really bad background, you do not have a testimony. I can remember growing up as a kid in a Southern Baptist church, about every summer, we had somebody come in and give us a real tear-jerking story. And, you know, this guy was a member of the Hell's Angels. You know, he was robbing banks. The next year, this guy was a member of the Crips, the head of the Crips gang in Chicago, and he got saved. And then the next year, you know, it was somebody else that was, you know, he was a stock car driver or whatever, and he was into drugs and all this, and he got saved. And it almost gives you the impression that unless you've been to the bottom of the barrel and came back, you don't really have anything to be thankful for. And you don't really have a great testimony. But when we look at these two judges, Tola and Jair, they don't have this bottoming out effect. They don't bring Israel back from the brink. And many people look down on them or call them minor judges when they should not be called minor judges. And the first point that we have there is that they are dismissed. Let's read these five verses that include two judges. And you can tell by what's said here that people kind of think, well, that nothing really happened there. Let me read it to you. Then we're in Judges chapter 10. I'm going to begin reading in verse 1, and I'll read through verse 5. And after Abimelech, there arose to defend Israel Tola, the son of Puha, the son of Dudu, a man of Issachar, and he dwelt in Shamir, in Mount Ephraim. And he judged Israel 23 years and died and was buried in Shamir. And after him arose Jair, a Gileadite, and judged Israel 22 years. And he had 30 sons that rode on 30 asses' colt, and had 30 cities, which he called Havoth-Jair unto this day, which are in the land of Gilead. And Jair died and was buried in Kamon. Now, you can see there, we don't have the classic story of the book of Judges. Israel's not in bondage to the Midianites. Israel's not being raided by the Philistines. Israel's not being hauled off into captivity. Instead, these guys rise up after Abimelech. Now, do you remember who Abimelech is? Son of Gideon by his concubine in Shechem. Remember what Abimelech did? Killed 70 of his 71 brothers. Only one of them left. And the one that was left was the youngest who hid. And he pronounced a curse on Abimelech. And he said, the men of Shechem, who have appointed you as their leader, are going to be cursed, and you're going to be cursed. And Abimelech turned on the men of Shechem and killed them. And then a woman threw a millstone out of the top of a tower and hit Abimelech in the head and killed him. And so that happened. Now people have said, well, isn't Abimelech a judge? No. Abimelech put himself in that position. The judges were appointed by God to do God's work. Abimelech tried to do that in his own power. And he never had the full leadership of Israel. So, after Abimelech, We just have this short window. I think it's 2 or 3 years that Abimelech reigns or rules in this little region and has his little band of mighty men after he dies. Now, under Gideon, there was a revival. There was a continuation of God worship. There was a continuation of blessing from God, even after his death, other than this little 3 year period of Abimelech. So since these guys didn't stab a king and bury the knife up to the handle, since they didn't slay 40, thousands of Philistines with the jawbone of an ass, since they didn't do some miraculous feat, then they must be minor prophets. They must be dismissed. And I don't think that's the case. Because I've taken this text that we're going to look at tonight, and I've got 7 more points there that I want to deal with and I want to show you. Some people said, well, they were just idle people, didn't do anything, nothing happened under their reign. That's not true. They lived in idolatry. That's not true. Well, God just left them to themselves as some form of punishment. That's not true. Commentators are all over the board on these two. And I don't want to lump everybody in the same boat and say I'm the one that's right. But I do want to say that these guys are glossed over. You get any commentary and you read about Gideon, there's pages and pages. Of course, Gideon takes up a few chapters. There's pages. But when you get to these two men, it's just blip. And they don't even deal with what's being said here. So what I want to do is deal with what's being said here. And the first thing that I want to point out is that these two judges, Tola and Jair, were defenders. Look at how verse 1 reads. Speaking of Tola, it says, "And after Abimelech, there arose to defend Israel Tola." Well, how did Tola defend Israel? What battles did Tola fight? Who did Tola fight with? The Bible doesn't tell us. The Bible doesn't tell us, does it? Did he fight somebody? I often joke the time that I was in the Air Guard, nobody wanted to fight with America when I was in. I mean, seriously, I got in right after Desert Storm. I got in right after Desert Storm, and I really thought as soon as I get out of my tech school, I'm probably going to be deployed to Iraq. But by the time I got through all my training and had my, my security police badge and all my clearances and trained in all my firearms, I was ready to go to war. And war was over. Nothing happened. And I did 6 years, and then I got this 2 years of inactive duty when I could be called up if they needed me. And I got my paper in the mail that said, my DD-214, you're honorably discharged from the United States military. I got that the week before 9/11 happened. And the year I got out, 2 months before we deployed to Hawaii for summer camp. My summer camps were Desert Warfare School and the swamps of southern Mississippi and Chaffee. And it was going to be thanks for 6 straight years of bad summer camp. You're going to Hawaii, and you're going to be there for 2 weeks. You're going to do 18 hours of beach patrol in 2 weeks. I'm like, sorry, I'm done. My 6 years is what I said I'd do. I'm tired. I'm done. I'm out. My buddy, who got in about the same time I did, he said, I always wanted to go to Hawaii. He re-upped for a year. He's still in the National Guard today. You see, he got called up because he still had a year left on his 2 years. He got called up. He got sent to Uzbekistan. He ate hot soup and MREs in a GP medium tent in the winter over there. And when he got back, I was like, hey, how was Hawaii? I said, was it worth it? Spending your winters in Uzbekistan. And he said, I should have done like you. Should have just got out and went to Hawaii on my own time. And I said, well, nobody wanted to fight with us when I was in. And that was the joke. And so I don't have VA benefits because we wasn't at war when I was in. I never went anywhere and went to war. So I did 6 years, I got nothing. But that's just a joke. Could it be that when Tola and Jair were judges in this region, nobody wanted to mess with Israel? Could it be that God raised up Tola to defend Israel? Because I want to be very clear to you. Having a ready military is just as good as having to go to war. If people look at your equipment and go, no, I don't want to fight with them, that's great. What was it that fella said that was the sheriff over there, walked softly and carried a big stick? Could it be that Tola and Jair had a ready force? Could it be that they knew these guys had the power of God upon them like Gideon, and the Ammonites and the Amorites and the Philistines backed away for the 45 years that these two men reigned in Israel back to back? I want to tell you something. You look at our own country. You look at our own country. For 8 years, everybody and their brother wanted to go to war with us. Bombed us, shot at us. People drove out and circled our naval ships in the Gulf of wherever over there. And I can't talk like that anymore. Over there where the people that believe that way live. Nobody was afraid of our military under Obama. But we have a different Secretary of Defense now who has the nickname of Mad Dog. And you don't get those nicknames for, you know, acting like a lap dog. And people don't fight with us anymore. Even the little guy over in Korea, he's toned it down. The people in Iran, everybody's toning it down. Why? It's not because we've declared war on them. It's because they know we're willing to declare war on them. That's exactly what I think happened under these two men. Does that make them bad? No, that makes them great. If you can walk around with a big gun on your hip and keep peace in the streets, that's better than having to shoot bad guys every day with a small gun. Right? You know, if you agree with me, you can nod your head up and down, and I'll know I can move on to the next point. But if you don't, you look at me cross-eyed, I'm going to keep going until we all get on the same page. All right. When you look down there at verse 4, I want you to notice that Jair had 30 cities. And these 30 cities, we know from history and other places of the Bible, were walled cities. They had a defensive position. You ever watch old Western movies? People get in trouble, they try to get to the fort. The Indians were after them, they had to get to the fort. Forts were places of safety scattered around for the cavalry to run into and for America to have their bases and their system of strength. When we look at the reign of Jair here, he has 30 of these walled cities in his area. What kind of strength and safety does that provide for their people, knowing that if things get bad, we can go back to the city and lock the gate and withstand a siege, and we have 29 other cities that will come to our rescue? That kind of strength and defense doesn't mean these guys were pushovers or didn't do anything. God raised them up to defend Israel, verse 1. That's what they were there for. Now, if you go out there and whip a little band of people all by yourself and nobody else wants to mess with you, then great. If that buys you 45 years of peace, I would rather have that than 45 years of turmoil. These aren't minor prophets. These aren't minor judges. These are major judges. Let's look at their descent. Where'd they come from? Let me give you this laundry list of names here in verse 1 that Tola comes from. He comes from the son of Puha, the son of Dodu, or Dudo, or Dudu, however you want to say it. I looked it up online to make sure I was pronouncing it right, and they both pronounced it differently. So I think it's Dudu, or Dudo, or Dodo, something like that. A man of Issachar. And I thought, I've heard of that name before, and so what I did was I looked it up, and you actually find this same list of names back in Genesis chapter 46. If you want to turn to Genesis 46, let me read you verse 13. It says, the sons of Issachar, Tola, and Puva, and Job, and Shimron. Now, the sons of Issachar, these are Issachar the tribe. Issachar is one of the 12, and these are his immediate sons. Well, the people that we're looking at here, you say, is this Issachar's grandson? No, that was several hundred years ago. Well, how in the world did we arrive at this name? Well, it's just like this. You ever met anybody today named George Washington? You ever met anybody today named Thomas Jefferson? You ever met anybody today named Ronald Reagan? People named their children after other people in history. It used to be real prominent. My great-grandpa's name was Augustus Columbus Fout because his dad thought that Columbus was a name that needed to be carried on because Columbus discovered America. So that's how he got his name. Well, when we look at this text, what we're seeing here is that Tola and Pua and Dodo, all these names are mentioned over and over as the ancestors of Israel. As a matter of fact, you don't have to turn there, but in Numbers 26, verse 23, it says, of the sons of Issachar, after their families, of Tola, family of the Tolites, and Pua, the family of the Punites. So Tola is being named after his great-great-great-grandfather. And Pua is named after his great-great-great-great-grandfather. And all they're doing is reusing these names. And these were key people that entered into the promised land. These were key people that came out of Egypt. And so these would have been great names within the tribe of Issachar to name your children after. That's all this is. These are people who have been named after other great people. Now, why is that important? Something tells me that they're naming their kid these names, hoping they get used the same way those people got used. Nobody names their kid Rocky and hope he grows up to be a wimp. Huh? I don't want him to be Rocky the computer nerd. I want him to be Rocky like the Balboa that beat the Russian. Okay? Same way with Jair, the Gileadite. And I've got my Bible so messed up. Let me give you some passages that talk about Jair. There is another Jair mentioned in Numbers 32, which I thought I kept my spot, but I didn't. Numbers 32, I want to read you verse 41 and see that there was another Jair, and that Jair can't possibly be this one. This Jair, it says in Numbers 32, verse 41, and Jair, the son of Manasseh, went and took the small towns thereof and called them Havoth Jair. Well, there's another Jair in history, and he's the son of Manasseh. And Manasseh's one of the tribes that comes in and takes over the promised land. Well, how can that Jair be the same Jair here? It's not. He's named after his great, great, great grandfather. So when you name your kid after a prominent hero in the Bible from your own tribe, you're naming him that name in the hopes that he grows up and becomes this person. Now let's think for just a moment. Gideon reigned in Israel 40 years, is that correct? How old do you think these men would be when they began to reign? 40? Probably, to be recognized as a leader. I think the youngest president we've ever had was what? 36 or something like that. So I would say if you were a leader in Israel, you're probably 40. It's possible. Matter of fact, it's more than possible. It's very likely. These people were born when they were under the oppression of the Midianites, and people were naming their children these great names of the past with the hopes that one day they would grow up and overthrow the Midianites. Well, here's what happened. Gideon already overthrew them. And they are riding under the peace that Gideon purchased with his conquering. But here's what we can safely take away from the text. These people were named after great men of the past. The name Tola means purple fabric. The name Jair means rise up or arose. So there's nothing particularly attached there. But we can see that their family intended them to grow up and accomplish something. Now, we've established them as defenders. Any questions about that? They did have a military presence and nobody wanted to mess with them. We've looked at their descent, where they came from. Let's look at their dedication. I want you to see these people as dedicated. So many of the commentators said these guys were just kind of vanilla. They didn't say anything. They didn't do anything. They didn't make any ripples. You don't have to go pick a fight to be committed. You don't have to go pick a fight. I'm telling you, there was times in my own ministry where nothing was happening. Nobody was excited. Nobody was mad. Nobody was encouraged. Nobody was discouraged. Everybody here was 72 degrees. And you know what? That gets real boring after a while. And I saw a church over in Fort Smith that just fussed and fought like dogs. And I thought, you know what? I think I'd rather go over there and fuss and fight with them. Because, hey, if I get in a scrap with them and I win, I got something. If I stay over here, we'll all be taking naps through my sermons together. And God had to teach me, look, you don't have to be in a firefight. You don't have to be on a mountaintop or going through a valley. You can be on a gradual slope and still be doing what I've called you to do. People have said that these two judges were lukewarm and didn't do anything. I disagree. And I disagree because of verse 1, that little phrase, he dwelt in Shamir in Mount Ephraim. Now, what do we know about Tola? He's from Issachar. Issachar and Ephraim are two different tribes. Issachar and Ephraim have two different sets of land. Why isn't he living among the people in the land of Issachar? Why is he living among the people of Ephraim? Every commentator agrees. It is far more accessible to all people in northern Israel to live on a mountain in Ephraim than it is to live way over in Issachar. Issachar is kind of out of the way. It's kind of like my house in Kibler. You don't pass by my place. You have to be going there. Same for Issachar. Now, why would Tola leave his homeland, leave his country, and go dwell in another land, in a nearby land? He did it so he could be more accessible to the people. He did it so he could be better to respond. The mount in Ephraim gave him a full view of the Valley of Jordan. And listen, if you take your job as the military commander of Israel seriously, why in the world would you go bury your head up in the bushes and not keep an eye on what's going on? The only reason you would transfer your headquarters to some other tribe and get up on some other mountain so that you can have an overlook of the entire valley, entire Jordan Valley, is if you took serious your responsibility to protect the entire Jordan Valley. Does that make sense? How can you say this guy wasn't dedicated? He moved his entire family and everything he had in order to better serve the people that he served. He wasn't self-centered. He wasn't selfish. He was committed. And he did it to be more accessible and be more available to the people and to be in a better defensive position. I think that's great. I don't see anything wrong with that. I think that's smart. Yes, Bob? Yeah, a militia. Yeah. Right. Yeah, if you're going to be president, you got to go to Washington where the rest of the government is. You know? And in the early, even in our own government, they quickly realized they couldn't govern from their living room. They had to go somewhere where everybody else was if they were going to govern. And that's what he's doing. And he's doing it because he's committed to the people that God's given him the oversight of. Any questions about that? So when you look at these two, men, Tola and Jair, they're defenders. They have a pedigree. They're named after great people of the past. They're named after great leaders, probably in hopes that they would one day grow up and hold these same type roles. They're dedicated, and nextly, they're developing. People have said that these men sat around and did nothing. They didn't sit around and do nothing. And I want to prove that by that phrase in verse 4. Jair had 30 sons that rode on 30 ass colts. And they had 30 cities, which are called Havoth Jair unto this day, which are in the land of Gilead. Now, let's think about this for just a moment. He's got 30 sons, and each son has a city. It would appear to me that he probably had more than one wife. Listen, Jair only ruled 22 years. If he had all these kids the first year he ruled, they'd all only be 22 years old. Jair probably had most of these 30 children before he began to be the judge of Israel in order for them to be old enough to have their own city and rule over it. But how do we know that they were developing? Well, we can prove that they were developing by 1 Chronicles chapter 2. Turning your Bible to 1 Chronicles chapter 2, I think this right here tells us that these men wasn't sitting on their hands. They were actually advancing and strengthening Israel and the people around them. When you look at 1 Chronicles chapter 2, verse 22. Then Segub begot Jair. This is not the Jair we're talking about. This is the original Jair that came into the promised land, who had 23 cities in the land of Gilead. The original Jair had 23 cities. Our Jair has 30 cities. No, the original Jair didn't have 23 sons. He captured 23 cities. He was the guy that went in and conquered them and drove out the enemy and took over these 23 cities. This Jair, who's named after the Jair that had 23 cities, this Jair has increased the number from 23 to what? 30. Now, we have a lot of talk today about the economy. But it appears to me that he's increased the number of cities in this region that have walls around them by almost 30%. I would say that's in a development, wouldn't you? If your stronghold's increased by a third, wouldn't you say that's progress? I'll guarantee you if he was running a campaign ad, that's what he would have on it. Under my leadership as judge of Israel, we went from 23 cities that my grandfather conquered to the 30 that my sons now rule. I would say they wasn't sitting back on their laurels doing nothing, twiddling their thumbs, and God was bored with them. I would say that they were making preparations and advancing Israel and carrying on. Look at the very next verse there in 1 Chronicles 2. It says in verse 23, and he took Geshur and Aram, the towns of Jair, from them, and the Kenneth, and the towns thereof, even 70 cities. All these belong to the sons of Michar, father of Gilead. Now, there were 60 cities, 70 cities that got cleared out. Jair possessed 23 of them and made them his cities. And he called them Havoth Jair. Havoth means dwelling place. The dwelling place of Jair. Jair's family tree took over this part of Gilead. And this region here belonged to them. And of the 60 cities that he wiped out, 23 of them he took over. Well, by the time this Jair comes along, he's increased that to 30. So he's possessed almost half of the cities that were available to him. I think that's a development. We know from other accounts that these cities were walled defensive positions. I think these guys were not just sitting around doing nothing. Notice, remember what we said Sunday? Christ came into Jerusalem riding on a donkey. And a donkey was a nice vehicle until Solomon brought in horses. And when horses came along, donkeys went out of fashion real quick. And so, here, the nicest thing you could ride would be a donkey. And the nicest donkey you could have would be a young one, a colt. And so, all 30 of his sons all had nice sets of transportation, all these cities. This would show great power. This would show to the people around Israel that Israel was not somebody to be messed with. This would show that they had made great advancements in their government. So I think it's unfair to say that these guys are minor judges. I think they're major judges. I don't think anybody wanted to mess with them, but I don't think they sat around and on their hands either. That brings us to our next thought. Anybody want to disagree that they weren't making developments and advancing the cause? Any questions about what we've been looking at so far? They were decorated. When these men died, they were well respected. Notice in verse 2 that when Tola died, he was buried in Shamir. That's the town in which he ruled from. Why wouldn't they take him back to Issachar and bury him in his family land? It would appear to me that he was buried where he chose to have his capital. And I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't a big monument of some kind there, recognizing the great years that they had after 23 years of peace and prosperity, that they made a great monument where he was buried to remind everyone of the great time they had under him. when someone is buried and it's recorded where they're buried, it's usually given to us because people remember them well. When people die and are forgotten, that's because they didn't do anything worth remembering. Same thing goes for Jair. When you look at verse 5, it says, "And Jair died and was buried in Canaan." Now, he's buried where he reigns at, and he also is being lamented and mourned. His grave is marked. These men were well respected when they died. People weren't going, "Glad to get rid of those losers. Thank God they're gone. I hope the next one's better than that." That was not the impression that people got. When these two men died, they were mourned. They were lamented. People reverenced them and marked their graves and remembered their great service. How can you call them a minor judge? You shouldn't. You shouldn't. I also want to mention to you that they were devout. So many commentators said these guys just allowed Israel to fall off into idolatry. They did not. Look with me at verse 6. I'm going to read the first part out of the King James Bible, and I want somebody with another translation to read this phrase. Verse 6, it says, "And the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord." Does anybody have another translation? New King James? Anybody have a New King James? Rendell, could you read what the New King James says in verse 6 of chapter 10? Just the first phrase. Okay, what was that first word? Then. How many of you's Bible has then? Yours is better than the King James. I'm not saying the King James is wrong, because the King James has the word again later on. But then gives us the clear interpretation. Then. When? After the death of Jair. Do you know what that means? When Jair was alive, people didn't act this way. When Jair was alive, this stuff wasn't going on. Then, after his death, they fell off into idolatry. So let's think about it. We got 40 years of Gideon. We got 23 years of Tola. We got 22 years of Jair. And nobody's excited about Tola and Jair because they didn't go out and kill the giant. Nobody's excited about Tola and Jair because they didn't rescue Israel from idolatry. I would rather keep you from idolatry than rescue you from it. I'd rather you not ever fall off into it, is to have to go get you out of it. And these men, for a combined 45 years, ruled Israel without the idolatry. At least not on a large scale. How many churches have 45 years of great ministry? Well, everybody's out there going, "Well, you know, first 10 years weren't too bad." And then all of a sudden, yeah, I know. Very few churches can say they went 45 years with faithful, consistent Bible preaching in their pulpit, with a clear gospel message from their church. Very few churches can say that. Most of the time, it doesn't take 5-10 years and you get one bad preacher and you get a handful of false doctrine and you get some schism within the body and everything begins to break up and fall apart. For these two men to be devout and devoted to God and nothing occur like this until after their death tells me that these guys were great judges. You know what their only problem was? They served at a time when nobody wanted to fight Israel. That was their only problem. Why do we overlook and minimize and try to explain away because they're average, they're whatever? Why do we do all that when these guys were evidently for back to back for 45 years doing exactly what God called a judge to do? I would say we ought to put these guys at the top. Remember the title of our series, Imperfect Leaders at the Perfect Time. These fellas don't look too bad to me. Huh? They don't look too bad to me. I mean, for as great as Gideon was, he went and built that gold monument to himself that everybody tended to be a snare to. These fellas aren't building no gold monument to themselves. I think you really have to pick hard to find something wrong with these guys. But I'm going to tell you what they did wrong, and it's our last point. Is everybody up to speed this far? These people are often dismissed. called minor and uneventful and nonchalant and boring and vanilla. But really they were defenders of Israel, as the Bible points out. They came from a long line of great leaders, and they were named after great leaders in hopes that they would too become great leaders. They were dedicated. They gave themselves to the ministry of Israel. They were advancing and developing and increasing the strength of their cities and the number of their cities. They were decorated when they died, and people remembered them and mourned their loss. And they were devout during their ministry. So what in the world was their downfall? The downfall cannot be attributed solely to Tola, because Tola dies 22 years before Israel falls in idolatry. But Tola can be equally blamed, because if Tola's children are still around, and I'm assuming he had some, then they should have been able to step up and lead, but they did not. Jair had 30 sons, 30 cracks at it. Any of you ever hope your kid grows up to play pro football, pro baseball, pro violin, be in a rock and roll band? All right, maybe a bluegrass, but Southern Gospel band, I'm sorry. You have these high hopes for your children, you know. You want them to grow up and be a doctor or a lawyer. We have these high hopes that we hope our kids would attain. If you got 30 rolls of the dice, I got 30 boys out of 30 children, and I got money to get them good training. We all got new donkeys this year, like we do every year. You can only ride the colts. The ass of a colt for so long, and it's no longer a colt. It's an old nag. You got money. I got 30 sons. I got the next Tiger Woods on my hand. One of these boys has got to turn out to be great. What happened? Jair died. The entire country went off into idolatry. He had 30 sons who had 30 cities. One of these boys should have rose up and said, you know, Dad wouldn't have done it this way. Maybe one of the boys did. Maybe all 30 of the boys raised up and said that. But the rest of the country said no. Do you know what the downfall of these two leaders were? They did not prepare the next generation to take their place. I hate to go country music on you, but George Jones is singing, "Who's Gonna Fill Their Shoes?" Some of you got that. Some of you kids didn't. Bless your hearts, you don't know what good music is. I get more amens on country music than I do Bible doctrine. The downfall of these leaders was that they had 40 years of Gideon's peace. 45 years of their peace. We're talking 95 years with no major world war. 95 years of prosperity, 95 years of community advance, 95 years of better government, 95 years of committed leadership, 95 years of serving God. And as soon as the old heads died, the younger generation went headlong into idolatry. You know what I bet they did? I bet they did away with church and went to youth group. I bet instead of teaching the kids the Bible, I bet you what they did, they put all the kids in a room and played rock music to them, right? I bet you they quit preaching and teaching Bible doctrine. I bet they said that's for the big kids and the big church. All you kids go to children's church, and you go to youth group, and you watch the puppet show, and you do fun stuff and play games. So when you get old and big, then you'll come into big church with the big kids. And you know what happened? When those kids grew up, they tried to go sit in mom and dad's church, and they didn't like that because they had never done that in their entire life. And so some enterprising young pastors said, let's build a church on the premise of a youth group. And let's make the sermons real short and real shallow and be on topics that people like, even if they're lost. Let's preach on movies this summer. We'll play loud music. We'll have a light show. We'll get a fog machine. We'll pep it up. We'll do everything that these kids want, because that's all they've ever received. Do you know what this generation is going to reap when they grow up? You say, Brother Harold, did they really have fog machines back then? I'm talking about right now. I'm talking about 95 years of Christian expansion in America. I was born in 75. It ain't my fault, Mom and Dad. It started before I got here. Christian prosperity, we no longer were fighting these battles. Everybody in America was practically saved already. People were actually saying the reason America is not mentioned in the book of Revelation is because the entire country went up in the rapture and this place was a ghost town. I heard that espoused during my lifetime. I'm going to tell you something. These major judges did a great job in everything during their lifetime except preparing the next generation. And if you look back at Baptist churches for the last 95 years, they've done a great job of everything but preparing the next generation to take over. And you look at all the churches that are started, they're not built around God's Word. They're not founded on a biblical gospel. They're founded around something that lost people like to do. We have motorcycle church. We have cowboy church. You can go through Northwest Arkansas. You can see the motorcycle church as you head out to Huntsville, right outside of Fayetteville. Got a big sign, motorcycle church. Meet here on Sunday, hear a brief message, get on your bikes and ride. Cowboy churches are being planted. They wanted so bad to put a cowboy church in Van Buren, and I threw a fit. Now, I got called everything under the name of that you could possibly call a preacher and still maintain your salvation because I was against this. But this is back when we contributed to the local association. And I said, I am not giving money for you to prostitute our gospel via cowboys. If the gospel alone is not enough for you to come to church and it takes a dip of snuff and a cowboy hat and a banjo to get them here, it ain't a church. And that was the end of our participation in the local association. And they didn't come to Van Buren, and I was the bad guy, but they started it in Ozark. And the cowboy church meets within the local Baptist Association building in Ozark. Baptist churches are not preparing another generation to take over. They're dumbing down the gospel that they have so that it's non-existent. They're making the exact same mistake that Tola and Jer made in their leadership of Israel. Now, let's be honest and bring things back to home. We ain't responsible for every church. I don't care what the association does. That's their business. But there is a little small realm of people that I do have some authority and influence over, and that's the people of Lee Creek, the members here. And if we don't take serious the putting forth of Bible doctrine and giving young people a theological foothold to stand on, and we just give them fun and games and church camp and VBS and backyard Bible club and all these other fun and exciting activities, but we do not teach them as an adult because they're one day going to be an adult, then guess what's going to happen? When Harold dies, when you die, your kids aren't going to go to church here anymore. Or if they do, they're going to turn this church into every other church around here. And then it won't be long until they bought in fully to the idolatry of the Ammonites and the Amorites. These guys were major judges and they did a great job in everything. Defending Israel, advancing Israel, devotion to God, decoration, living impeccable lives, being well remembered. And they failed their children. Be a hardcore, fundamental Baptist preacher. But if you're not preparing your children to take over when you're gone, take over. Not live, take over. You're failing. How many times have we seen churches? There were stalwarts for the gospel. The pastor retire or die. The next preacher come along and the entire church fall apart. It is a pitiful pastor who does not prepare his church to carry on in his absence. The real test of how great of a job I've done as your pastor will not be you got goosebumps during a sermon I preached. It will be what happens here after I die. If y'all all turn on each other, fight each other, Bring in some young, hip, cool pastor that don't know the Old Testament from the New Testament. And that's what you do. Then history will record that Harold Smith was a failure as pastor. But I want to give you enough Bible and let the Bible be the Bible and give you enough truth. And let the Holy Spirit apply the truth of God's Word to you so that in my absence you still are able to make wise decisions and select another pastor to carry on the ministry in which you've been engaged in. And the only way that's going to happen is through long, boring Bible studies about old people in the Old Testament. There's no shortcuts. That's the only way it works. Questions about their downfall or anything else? No questions. Okay.